following is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
What do you get when you combine 12 years in the NFL, three bowl I can't mention rings,
multiple Pro Bowl appearances,
and 15 years of broadcasting on ESPN? You get a podcast. That's what you get.
You're damn right.
This is The Stinkin' Truth, an in-depth look at the NFL, sports, and life.
Awesome!
Boom! Bang!
Now, here's your host, Mark Schlereth.
Hey guys, thanks so much for downloading The Stinkin' Truth. I really appreciate you joining the program. I got a great program planned for you today. I'm going to talk a little bit about the preseason. Four games, a lot of people complaining about the preseason. I'm going to tell you why that'll never change. And also, I'm going to talk about T-Sizzle, his hit on Sam Bradford, and why I got no issues with it. Peyton Manning, you want to win a championship, or do you want to compile statistics? The choice is yours, but if you're going to win a championship, you better adhere to what Gary Kubiak is telling you. But the thing I want to start with today is a little bit of a story. You know, you guys know that I'm somewhat of a Twitter freak, right? I'm a hound on there. And interestingly enough, several months ago, I was in a lot of pain. My back was killing me. And I had mentioned how on Twitter I was dying from this. Does anybody have anything good for the back? And I can't tell you how many people – I was inundated with people that said, go to DDP Yoga. Try out DDP Yoga. Dallas Diamond Page, ex-professional wrestler, a great dude, guy that I've become friends with now, has a yoga program. And I'm like, I don't know. Anyhow, I looked it up. I watched some of the just compelling stories, guys like – Arthur Bowman, who transformed his life. He was a former paratrooper. Jake the Snake Roberts did the same thing. Guys that were ready pretty much to give up on life have completely transformed their life through this program. So I got in contact with DDP. He sent me the program out. I started doing it. And I got to tell you, I still do it to this day. And it's helped me get back into the gym. It's helped me start my lifting program again. And I absolutely love it. But one of the great things about DDP Yoga for me was – it was one of those things that, you know, you start to make these little gains. You start to have these little changes in your life. And for me, what happened was, and I hadn't really noticed. I knew I was feeling a little bit better. I knew I had a better range of motion. I knew things were okay. But one morning I got up and I just put my pants on. And I buckled them up, you know, and then I put my belt on. And then I started walking out of my bedroom. And it dawned on me. It's the first time in probably 12 years where I didn't brace myself in the doorway of my bathroom to put my pants on one leg at a time. I just put one leg in and I put the other leg in. Normally, now for people who have back pain, for those of you who don't have any back pain, God bless you. Be thankful. Give thanks every day. But for those who do, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I have to brace myself every time I sneeze. I had to put my hand in a doorway and prop myself up to put my pants on every day of my adult life because my back hurts so bad. And I put my pants on after 3 weeks of DDP yoga without even thinking about it. And so I'm telling you, I'm glad to welcome him into the program. He's been a good friend, and he certainly has helped give me a better quality of life and got me back into the game, so to speak. So if you want to see more about the program that helped change lives of Arthur Bowman, who I talked about, or Jake the Snake Roberts, or even me, go to ddpyoga.com/thestinkingtruth. where our listeners will get an amazing deal on DDP Yoga program. That's ddpyoga.com/thestinkingtruth. ddpyoga.com/thestinkingtruth. Go check it out and change your life.
The Stinkin' Truth with Mark Schlereth.
All right, let's get into it. Preseason football, right? I tell you what, I get so many people on Twitter and anywhere I go that complain about preseason football to me. I'm in the gym today. People asking me about the preseason games. Do we really need them? A lot of people coming up to me about the injury of Jordy Nelson saying, are you kidding me? In a preseason game, this guy gets hurt? What gives, man? Can't we just pare it down to one or two preseason games? Do we really have to play four preseason games? Well, let me tell you why that's not going to change anytime soon. One, the economics of preseason. All right? Think about it. Owners, one thing we know about billionaire owners, they didn't become billionaires because they like to give money away, right? They're greedy. Are you kidding me? So think about the economics of preseason football, where you're paying your normal roster during the regular season. I think the salary cap is somewhere upwards of $140 some odd million, right? That's where it is. Think about preseason football. What are you paying those guys on the roster during preseason football? $1,200 a week? $1,500 a week? That's essentially what you're paying those guys. So you are making money in the preseason as an owner. As a matter of fact, that's where some owners make the majority of their money for the year. You've got four preseason games that you're splitting the gate with the team that you're playing with. You're charging regular season prices for four preseason games. You're making big fat cash. You think you're going to give that up if you're an owner? You're charging your fans the same amount of money that you're charging them for week 12 in a playoff push to go watch a preseason game. And you're going to give that up? Plus, you're getting parking. Plus, you're getting the tailgating revenue or the not only the gate revenue, but also the revenue from food and parking and T-shirts and hats and all those different things. You're never going to give that up. The economy of preseason is not going to allow you to give that up. Now, here's the other thing that's interesting about the preseason and why you're not giving up preseason and four games. It's about roster development. And I know a lot of you are going to sit there and say, well, you already basically know what your roster consists of. Well, think about this. The National Football League is constructed in such a way that 80% of the guys are making 20% of the money. I call it the 80-20 rule. 20% of the guys are making 80% of your salary cap figure. Your quarterback, you're paying him $20 million. Your top wide receiver, you're paying that guy $12, $13, $14 million. Your top cornerback, you're paying that guy $12, $13, $14 million. Your left tackle, you're paying $12, $13, $14 million. You're paying one of your top safeties, big money. Maybe one more offensive lineman, big money. The bottom line, your top rushing defensive end, you're paying that guy in excess of $12, $13, $14 million. Maybe it's your best defensive tackle. But the bottom line is this. Five guys right there are taking about 70% of your or over 50%, 60%, 70% of your salary cap figures. So, like I said, 20% of your guys are essentially taken 80% of what you have from a salary cap figure standpoint. So the rest of us schlubs like me who played for a long time are fighting for the scraps off a long shanks table, right? We're fighting for that other 20% out there. So what you have to do now, the way rosters are constructed, when I was coming into the league, you used to keep a bunch of veteran players as backup players. You don't do that anymore because you have to pay the top players the top dollar figures. So everybody else has to basically scrap for what they can get. So you have to have a roster that's constructed of first, second, third year players that are making a minimum wage off of rookie wage scales, off their rookie contracts. So that's how rosters are constructed nowadays, and that's why you're one or two injuries away from going to the penthouse to the outhouse in the National Football League, because the rosters are constructed that way because of the economics of the way teams are built. Again, 80% of the guys making 20% of the money, your superstars, 20% of the guys making 80% of the money. So you're not going to give up preseason because you have to develop young players that you're going to have to count on at some point to come in and play for you at a very, very economical price because they're playing on rookie salary cap wages. So that's another reason it's not going to change anytime soon. The only way it's going to change is if owners give up two preseason games and get two extra games tacked on to a regular season where they can actually make more money doing it that way than they can right now. But it's economically going to have to make sense for owners to do that. And right now it doesn't, and they're not giving up that cash flow. One of the other interesting things about the preseason that I have noticed is a lot of people talking about the injury risk and why even play in the preseason because so many guys are getting injured. We talked about Jordy Nelson. He's out for the season with the Green Bay Packers, torn ACL. And I'm telling you what, and I believe this, I think the way the collective bargaining agreement went down a couple of years ago, you've actually from a collective bargaining standpoint, collectively bargained more injuries into the game. It's the law of unintended consequences. What you did was basically say, hey guys, you know, with the head trauma and all the head issues and the concussion issues, we don't want to practice anymore. We don't want to play football in the post or the off season. We don't want the OTAs. We don't want any contact. We don't want to do any football stuff during the football season. We only want to have X number of padded practices during training camp. We don't want to practice twice a day in pads. All these things, right? That's what we've done. And so what we end up doing to our athletes is we end up developing a bunch of weightlifting stars and a bunch of track stars in the off season that don't have football skills. The only way you get in shape to play the game of football is by playing the game of football. And right now, because the offseason is constructed the way the offseason is constructed, you don't get to play football anymore. It's just not what you do. You don't touch each other. So what ends up happening to you is you do all these drills. You run up and down the field. You do your hundreds. You do your, you know, your 110s. You do your upbacks. You do all that stuff. You do burpees until you want to throw up. You jump over boxes. You do all this crap that doesn't really make you a football player. It just makes you a athlete. And then all of a sudden, you get out on a football field early in camp. And now you're starting to lean on guys, right? One-on-ones between receivers and defensive backs, one-on-ones between offensive and defensive linemen, between linebackers and running backs. And all of a sudden you have that weight, that little extra nudge, that guy hand fighting you. And what happens? ACLs get torn in non-contact drills or just minor contact drills. You get torn Achilles tendons and all these different things. And I believe it's because during the course of the offseason, you're never practicing football. You're never developing kinesthetic awareness of what it's like to be pushing one body against another body. You don't develop the proprioception skills that you have to have as an athlete to react when somebody that's weighing 300 pounds is pushing on you and you have to basically react and play with leverage. You don't get to develop that anymore. And that's another reason, or that's a reason that I think these injuries are happening more frequently in my mind than they've happened in the past because of the way we've collectively bargained this thing. So until the next collective bargaining agreement comes up and smarter minds prevail, you're going to get four preseason games regardless, and you're going to continue to have the injuries that you can't stand. The guys like Jordy Nelson, and I feel sorry for all you guys who drafted him with your first pick overall or your second pick overall in your fantasy draft because you decided to go early on your fantasy draft, and now you're stuck without Jordy Nelson. Too bad for you. You should push your draft back a little bit later. One of the other things that has, you know, kind of got stuck in my craw here in the last 3 or 4 days is the hit on Sam Bradford, the starting quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, by Terrell Suggs, the starting defensive end for the Philadelphia Eagles. And it's been really interesting because I have been sparring with people on Twitter and I've been on Philadelphia radio and I've been a trending topic in Philadelphia, if you will, based on this hit. And as I watch the play and rewatch the play, it's a classic zone read look that Sam Bradford gives and the Philadelphia Eagles give. And this came out to, I guess it was today or Monday, I guess it was, where Chip Kelly denies that particular play being a read zone play. And this is Chip Kelly. It was a handoff. Not every shotgun run is a read zone play. We didn't run any read zone. We don't run as much as read zone as everyone thinks we do. I thought the interpretation of the field judge was correct. Well, the head of NFL officiating, Dean Blandino, said on NFL Network that the flag should not have been thrown. Kelly refuted Dean Blandino's explanation. He said it wasn't a read option play, but everybody thinks it was a read option play. I know our quarterbacks can get hit on read option plays, but not everything we run is read option. We run sweep, we run power, we run counter, we run trap, we run all those things. Everyone in the league runs shotgun runs. This is Kelly again. Are we going to hit a quarterback every time in the league when they hand off from shotgun? That's up to the league. I think it would be troubling for the league if every quarterback in shotgun can be hit. Let me just say this. You are so full of crap, Chip Kelly, that it's unbelievable to me that that's the explanation you've given. You know what you're doing? You're playing the golden shower shower game. What's the golden shower shower game, you ask? Well, let me tell you what the golden shower shower game is. So when I was a college player, oftentimes we'd walk in the shower after a game and the whole team is in there, you know, and everybody's showering. And you'd walk up to a dude that you played next to. And you'd say to that guy, hey, man, on that 34 read zone that we ran, where the running back got tackled in the backfield, what did the Mike linebacker do? What'd you see him do? And you'd really engage in this football conversation with one of your buddies. And while your buddy was explaining exactly what he saw in that particular play, you're urinating on that dude's leg. And he can't feel it because of the heat of the shower, right? That's the golden shower shower game. And then everybody's laughing because as he's trying to explain what happened on that play, you're peeing on it. And that's exactly what Chip Kelly's doing. Don't pee on the media's back and tell them it's raining. You're lying. Let me ask you this from a blocking scheme standpoint, okay? On that particular play, here's the blocking scheme. We don't block the defensive end. What does that say to the defensive end? Hey, guys, it's a zone read play, okay? He's the end man along the scrimmage. The quarterback eyeballs the defensive end that isn't being blocked. Why? Because he wants to hold the defensive end and keep him from crashing. Or if he does crash, he can pull the ball out and take it around the edge. Classic read zone look. So he eyeballs the end man line of scrimmage. Then he sticks the ball in the gut of the running back with two hands and rides it. You don't do that on just any old handoff. That is classic read zone action. Okay? That's what it is. Your classic read zone action. You've stuck it in there with two hands to show, hey, look, it's read zone. I could pull it. Let me hold the backside so you can't make a tackle in the backfield. That's exactly what it is. I don't care if you called it a handoff. You're still reading or you're still running read zone action. So that's exactly what the defensive end is seeing. And if he's taught on read zone to go smack the snot out of the quarterback, guess what? That's on you for not changing the system. You want to have your cake and you want to eat it too. Are you kidding me? It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. It drives me crazy. You know what? If you don't want people to hit your quarterback on read zone action, then you should walk up to the line of scrimmage and say, fellas, we're going to run a read zone look. But the quarterback is just going to hand it to the running back. He's not going to be a run threat on this play. So, okay, just to give you that information, so don't hit our quarterback in this play. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. You can't have your cake and eat it too. If you're going to run read zone fake action, then guess what? Your quarterback is going to be put in harm's way. You know what great coaches do? They change their system. If you got a quarterback with bulky knees that had two ACLs the last couple of years, you don't put him in that position. Because he can't handle that position. And every defensive end in America is going to start hitting your quarterback. And as far as Terrell Suggs is concerned, when people are sitting there saying, oh, he's such a cheap shot. He went after that quarterback's knees. Give me a break. Stop it. You know what? All you people watching in slow motion, let me just tell you something. This isn't Madden. The game is not played at the speed of your couch. It's real time. It's real speed, right? That's what it is. And when your entry point as a defensive end is at a guy's thigh and that guy moves to avoid the hit and you get around his knees, tough turds. That's on you. The bottom line is this. What do you want Terrell Suggs to do? Hit him in the – go after his, at his shoulder? And what happens when Sam Bradford all of a sudden cringes and ducks down and then it's helmet-to-helmet contact and now – Terrell Suggs is out $50,000 because the league fines him for something that's inevitable, something you can't avoid, and he's going to be suspended for a game. No, he's going to go at the thigh level, and he's going to hit him. And if he hits your quarterback's knees and your quarterback gets hurt, guess what? That's on you for calling that stupid trash. So, Chip Kelly, don't stand there on your pulpit and piss down my leg and tell me it's raining because I ain't buying it. All right, that's enough about that. I'm going to move on to something more pleasant, one of my favorite subjects. My son Daniel is going to join the program when we come back. But first, let me talk to you about Casper Mattress. Are you tired of being tired? Well, let me introduce you to Casper Mattress. That's right, Casper is an online retailer of super comfy premium mattresses for a fraction of the price of retail mattresses. It's super comfy because Casper's mattress is one of a kind. It's a new hybrid mattress that combines premium latex foam with memory foam. It's just the right amount of sink, gets you that comfortable sleep, just the right bounce. The latex foam and the memory foam work together for a better night's rest. And producer Rich, man, you have one of these Casper mattresses. They're supposed to send me one. I'm dying to get it because I must wake up 8 times a night. Tell me about your experience with Casper.
Yeah, it's, you know what? It comes in a box, you know? So it just big box rolls out front, and you go, there's no way a bed can fit in here, right? Unroll it. Boom. It doesn't smell. It doesn't stink. It doesn't take forever to inflate. It's just there, and you go, this can't possibly be the most comfortable mattress in the world looking at it, you know? It's not that it looks like garbage. It's just, you know, it's a regular looking mattress, and you lay down on this thing. You lie down on this thing, and you go, oh my God. It's like a body hug. It's like, you know, I mean, I don't like squishy mattresses, right? I like firmer mattresses, but, you know, firmer mattresses also, you know, sometimes put your arms to sleep, your legs to sleep, your shoulder to sleep, whatever. It hurts your back. This thing is firm but soft. That's the only way I can describe it. And you can't really even it doesn't make sense unless you lay down on one.
I can't wait to receive mine. Now, you know, we all know that a mattress can cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost between $500 for a twin, $850 for a queen, $950 for a king. You can get this obsessively engineered mattress with a shockingly good price, fair price. Casper's revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the dealing with the middleman, right? The showrooms, you don't have to do the showrooms, the resellers. They pass that savings directly to the consumers. You buy it online, risk-free. Casper offers free delivery and returns within a 100-day period. It's that simple. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress in all reality. You spend a third of your life on it, for crying out loud. It's truly risk-free trial, and the return policy, you can't beat it. Try sleeping on Casper for 100 days with free delivery and a painless return. And the mattresses are all made right here in the good old US of A. You get $50 toward any mattress purchase by going to a special Casper site at casper.com/stink. Then be sure to use the promo code stink. Again, that's casper.com/stink. Use the promo code stink and get your great night's sleep now. Coming up next, my favorite baseball player in the whole wide world joins me right here on The Stinkin' Truth.
Hey, it's Rich Eisen, the sole proprietor and host of The Rich Eisen Show, heard around the world here at Podcast One. Now, unless you've been living under the proverbial rock, you're probably aware that football season is now barreling down upon us, which means I get to stop talking about deflated football's federal lawsuits, sucker punches, and Rex Ryan's inmate collection. Instead, I get to yap about some real honest-to-goodness football games. So let's do this, people. The Rich Eisen Show. Get 3 servings a day, every day, Monday through Friday, right here at Podcast One. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, you like making great money, right? So here's a cool opportunity I have to share with you. Driving with Uber. Uber is that popular smartphone app that connects riders and drivers. My family's taken Uber a bunch. We've always had a great experience chatting with the drivers, getting to know people. I'm a real social butterfly anyhow. It works perfectly. My daughter uses it all the time in Chicago to and from work. She works night. It's just a safe way for her to get around. So if you love, like me, being your own boss, you love earning great money, who doesn't? It's easy to start. All you need is a car and a license. Driving with Uber is great for anyone who needs that flexibility. Parents, this is a really easy way to work around your family's schedule. Students, you can make some extra cash between classes. Now's the prime time to cash in driving with Uber. You'll thank me for telling you how to get paid every week. I could be getting into your car next. So here's what you've got to do. You've got a car. You've got a license. Put them both together and start working for you, earning serious life-changing money today. Sign up to Drive with Uber. All you got to do is visit drivewithuber.com. That's drivewithuber.com. Drivewithuber.com.
Now back to The Stinkin' Truth with Mark Schlereth.
Well, as I mentioned, I've got a very special guest on the program today, And I've titled it, and I tweeted about it, From T-Ball to the Big Leagues, A Father and Son Journey. Now, before I introduce my son, Daniel, I want to tell you, oftentimes I go around and I speak corporately, motivational speaking, and I talk about football, and I talk about broadcasting, I talk about business, and inevitably, if you open it up for questions at the end of a speech, one of the questions I always get was, what did you do to spend quality time with your kids? And the answer to that is, anytime I set an hour aside to spend some quality time with my kids, they did something to piss me off. And that's not really the key. The key for me was quantity time. I always wanted to be involved. And I made it a point from the time my kids were born that I was going to be there. I was going to be involved. And I ended up coaching my son's baseball team from the time he was in T-ball to the time he went to high school. I coached my daughter's soccer team for 7 years. And it was one of the things that I just wanted to be a part of. And when you're raising a kid who's a great athlete, there's nothing better. Although I didn't do it all right, and there was a lot of mistakes made along the way. But without further ado, let me introduce my son, Daniel. Boy, how are you doing, man?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So let's go all the way back to the beginning. I don't know.
First of all, go ahead and pat yourself on the back.
You want me to pat myself on the back a little bit more? I can do that. I can sit here and talk about myself all day long. It is my favorite subject. You know that, son. Hmm? Yeah, okay. You have no comment on that?
No, nothing. Go ahead. Ask me a question.
All right. Well, I want to go back to T-ball, man. What are your first memories of being a four-year-old and playing in T-ball? Do you have any memories of that?
Well, if I remember right, I was 5 years old. And,
well, you were four when we started, son. When I signed you up, you were four, but you turned five during the season.
Okay, that's fair. I don't remember much. I played for the New York Mets in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
let's see, I can remember playing a lot of catch in the front yard of the house. Besides that, I was trying to hit a home run every time, and that one triple play that we got to turn. Those are probably my only memories of that.
It's funny you bring up the triple play, Daniel, because I remember we had a game and you had turned a double play. And the thing about Daniel was he was exceptionally skilled, and I had 6 months of the year off. So Daniel and I were just goofing around playing catch all the time, right? We were just playing all the time as a little kid. And so you had this great skill set compared to everybody else. Anyhow, he threw this or turned this double play. He was playing first, shot down. You know, the base is always loaded in T-ball. Some kid hit a line drive to him. He caught it and stepped on first. And we're driving home, and you're in the back seat. You're all buckled up, and I'm driving. And I'm looking at you in the rearview mirror, and I could see the wheels turning. And so I asked, like, what are you thinking about, boy? And he's like, well, tomorrow, you know, he's talking about the double play. He goes, tomorrow I think I'll turn a triple play. And so I give this whole dissertation to this 4 or 5 year old about how a triple play is almost impossible and it's never going to happen. And, you know, don't get your hopes up and all these different types of things. And the next thing I know,
crushing my dreams.
Right. I was crushing your dreams. Exactly. The next thing I know, the next day, sure enough, he's playing third at this time, a lefty playing third, line drive to him, steps on third base, turns and just slings this bullet to this kid who's literally standing on top of the bag. And the kid, it just goes right into his mitt. And you guys all, I don't know if you remember that. Do you remember all running to the dugout, screaming triple play, triple play? Do you have any recollection of that?
No, I don't remember that. I remember throwing that ball, though, and about taking that kid's chest cavity out. But other than that, I don't remember everyone screaming. But I was pretty excited about that one.
Right, everybody came running in, triple play, and you know, then we had to, because everybody in T-ball bats, so we had to send you guys all back onto the field after all the celebrations. We had to find the hats, you know, because everybody's throwing their hats in the air and their mitts in the air, and send you guys all back on the baseball field, which to me was, it was just incredible. It was a real life lesson. You know, it's funny, I've done a bunch of different corporate events over the years, and I do one on baseball, like 9 life lessons I've learned from baseball, from coaching you in baseball. Now, one of the things, as we progress and as we get older, and I've got to tell myself, first off, I've got to apologize to my son. I want to say that I'm sorry, because there were times when I was a real dick. I was just a jerk at times. And, you know, I mean, I took this approach, Daniel, from the standpoint of, you know, I was a professional athlete at the time, and I kind of, even when you're 7 and 8 and 9 years old, I'm like putting professional athlete rules to you as far as the way you play the game. So I'd like to apologize for that. But the one thing that was amazing about you in this is that you never told on me. Like, if I told the girls, like, hey, we're going to watch a PG movie and don't tell mom, and as soon as mom walked through the door, you know, the girls say, mom, guess what we watch? You know, and I get in trouble. But you never ever told on me. Why'd you keep everything a secret when I was kind of being tough on you?
Well, it's simple. It's just guy code. You don't do that to your buddies and your dad, apparently. It worked out for me, though, didn't it? So I, back then, I was a little upset, and I buried all my feelings, which now is hurting me in my own marriage. But I think it helped out in the long run. And it's with girls and boys, it's different. Now that I have a little girl, I can see why you can't discipline a little girl like that. But with a little boy, you got to smack him around, push him down a few times, and you know, they live. And I just teach them to be tough, man. You got to be tough in this world because it's not handed to you.
Well, that's for sure. And of course, not literally smack them around, but put them down. I totally understand that. Now, you know, it's interesting. Since the time you were seven, Daniel, I basically said to you since the time you were seven that you were going to be a big leaguer. Thinking back to that, what kind of effect did that have on you? From the time you were seven until you got into the big leagues, I told you that you're going to be a big leaguer. What kind of effect do you think that had on you?
I don't think that affected anything because I felt that way too. I heard it from other people, but I didn't really let anyone, penetrate the way I was trying to think about it from my own, from myself. So I didn't really consider, no offense, anyone else's feelings in that. I just knew in my heart that I would get there because I was going to do whatever it took to get there. So sometimes you got to block things out, but maybe you saw something that made you say that or whatnot. But I just, in my heart, I felt like I would always get there no matter what. No matter what it took, I felt that I was going to get there.
One of the things and one of the reasons I felt like that was going to happen is because you were a tireless worker. And
right.
You were always grabbing me from the time you were a little guy. I'll never forget, I'm driving home from practice and I'm beat to a pulp. And you know how bad my body was. And I'd pull up in the driveway and maybe you were 8, maybe you're 9 years old. And there'd be that white 5-gallon bucket sitting in the middle of the lawn. Signifying to me that, hey, we're going to throw a bullpen. And that's one of the reasons that I knew you were going to be or you're going to make it because you were relentless when it came to working on your craft. How did that happen? Where did that come from?
I don't know. I still am that way. I'm obsessive. My personality is obsessive about always trying to get better and find things, and I think that kind of hurts me a little bit to where I just kind of pick some over here, pick someone's brain over here, and then I end up getting out of my own element. But that's just, that comes from being, like you said, it comes from being relentless, never being satisfied. I've never wanted to just stay where I was at. I've always wanted to get better, and I think you're just born with that. I don't know what it is. Some people have it, and some people are just talented enough to just coast, but I just felt like I always wanted to work on something and get better. And from the time I was little, you know, I've broken so many windows, and just from wanting to hit or throw or just be outside and work on my skills. And I just I guess you're born with that. I don't know. I just have always really taken to the game, and I've always taken to football too. I love sports, and when you're young, that's all. Especially when I was young, that's all I thought about, and that's. I'm glad to be doing what I'm doing now.
You grew up in a professional locker room. I mean, I had you over with the Redskins. I had you over with the Broncos. You grew up in those locker rooms in that environment. What kind of influence do you think that had on you as far as you becoming a professional baseball player?
Well, I think that was a huge advantage for growing up. Not many kids get to do that, especially not many kids that make it to the NFL or make it to Major League Baseball. I think there's maybe, 5 or 6 kids that have that have gone to the big leagues or the NFL from a different sport parent. So it's pretty rare. But I think that helped me a lot because I wasn't afraid. You know, I was around a lot bigger people growing up, all those huge guys in the locker room, and you're not small. So I was never really intimidated by, I guess, the image of professional sports. I've never been scared, and I didn't grow to be as tall as you, but I still carry that with me to this day. I don't really fear anybody, and I think that really helped. I just was always comfortable in my own skin.
One of the things that used to drive me crazy, and it's probably because you were so gifted and so talented, was you could Cadillac a little bit. You had a propensity at times, and like I said, you were a tireless worker at home, but in the games, oftentimes it was so easy for you compared to the other kids. You always played up a year or two, so you were playing at 7 years old. You were playing with 8 and 9 year olds and those type of things, and the thing that I used to get frustrated about and try to hold your feet to the fire about was about the effort that you were going to give me. And I used to say it to you all the time when you were a kid, you know, I don't care if you strike out, you know, 3 or 4 times, you're going to run hard down the first baseline. You're going to do these things, you know, you're going to play the game the right way. And sometimes you would be out there Cadillac. And I want to tell this story real quick about the Silver Falcons. Now, Daniel played, I think you were, it was the big year, because it's the first year where you're 12 or 13 that you got to wear metal spikes.
That was 12 years, I think. That's the age where you can wear metal.
Okay, and the metal spikes are a big deal, right? Tell everybody how big a deal that is for a little kid.
The biggest deal for a little leaguer.
Right. You it's like you're moving. It's like you're you know, it's the bar mitzvah of Little League Baseball, right? I mean, it's the big deal. You're wearing these metal spikes. And at the time,
noise.
I was...
It's the noise they make on the concrete. That's what separates you.
Okay, so when you're walking in the metal cleats, it's like, I'm a baseball player. Listen to my metal spikes hitting the concrete.
Yeah, we got real spikes on. We're not in our Umbros with soccer cleats. We got metal spikes. We're real deal now.
All right, so I have this contract with Reebok because I'm playing with the Broncos at the time. And in this catalog of you know the apparel, there's a pair of royal blue with silver piping metal spikes. Now, Daniel's looking through this catalog, and he says to me, "Oh, my Lord, I played for the Silver Falcons. That's the color." They were old Air Force uniforms. So Daniel brings him to me and says, "Dad, can I have these spikes?" And so, you know, being the fatherly type that I am, I'm going to make it one of those situations where, okay, I'll get you these spikes, but you're going to promise me that you're going to give great effort every time you have these spikes on because they're going to set you apart. So that's the bargain we make, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Okay, so I get him these metal spikes, and he's out in center field, and he's, I mean, looking for four-leaf clover. I don't know what he's doing. He's just not paying attention. And suddenly, this ball gets hit in his direction, and he has no idea. He's not tracking it whatsoever. And so he misreads it. Then it's over his head. He has to go back and grab it. And now this is the anger issue that I have about not giving great effort. And I've seen so many guys that were so talented come through the NFL ranks that just didn't prepare, didn't study, didn't give great effort, that never made it, that should have made it. So, you know, that's not going to be my son. So we get done with the game. He knows I'm hot. I'm angry with him. I get done cleaning the dugout because I'm one of the coaches, and he's sitting in his mother's car. And I walk over to the car, and I just rap on the window. I said, "Get in my truck." And, you know, he does not want to go. Daniel doesn't want to go to the truck. But he gets in the truck reluctantly, and we drive home, and I read him the riot act about effort and how it's unacceptable and how we made this deal. And so the punishment was, I'm taking away your shoes, which could have been the most embarrassing thing ever, right, Daniel? Because you had to go back to the old soccer cleats, the old rubber cleats for the next game.
Yeah, old rubber cleats, and everyone else had metal, so that would have been kind of embarrassing, yes.
Completely embarrassing. So that was his punishment. He dealt with the punishment. I suspended him from the shoes for one game, and then he got his shoes back the next game. So fast forward to the preseason. It's maybe my first year with the Broncos. I believe it was my first year, and we're playing the Buffalo Bills in a preseason game. And you know, first team offense does pretty well. We score some touchdowns and stuff. And then the second team offense comes in, the third team offense comes in. We end up losing the game to the Buffalo Bills. Now, I'm hot because baseball and football are really different. Baseball, there's so many games that you just kind of move through a season. And if you lose one, it's all right. We're just trying to win a series and that type of thing. In football, when you lose even a preseason game, you're going to be punished. You know, normally you win the preseason game, the next day maybe you get the day off and you don't have to come in and watch the film. You lose it, you have to come in and watch the film, you got to lift, then you got to run, and you know, the coaches are just going to abuse you. So we get done with the game, I'm hot. And I don't want to sign autographs. I don't want to do anything. I just want to get – we had this van. I just want to get out of the stadium, get my wife and my daughters and my son, get us back in the van, and head home. So I grab everybody. We roll through the crowd. We get into the van. Bam, we're out of there. So we're rolling up I-25, complete silence. Everybody knows that I'm upset because I'm going to have to go into work tomorrow. I'm not getting the day off. And, you know, it's camp and you're miserable and I got to go back up to Greeley. And it's just it's going to be a nightmare, right? So we're in – the middle of traffic on I-25, heading back up to the house, dead silence in the van, and what do you say to me?
I believe I said, I'm going to need your shoes.
Yes, Dad, I'm going to need your shoes. And I tell you what.
I give you great effort.
Complete and total, the silence of the van was gone, the laughter in the van. It was one of the classic moments of, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. My 12-year-old son has taken my shoes from me as punishment for the Broncos losing that particular game. And it was, I don't know, it was just one of the great moments for me, having that time to coach you and to be with you and to spend those times with you and kind of try to teach some life lessons. So speaking of life lessons, is there anything that you took into your own career based off of my career, what you saw me go through? Is there anything you took from my career that has helped you kind of in your own career as a baseball player?
Well, a lot, everything really. You got 3 Super Bowl rings. I have 0. I have an American League champion ring, so I still need to win 3 World Series titles before I can talk smack. I got to get back to the big leagues first to do that. But I always wanted to play a little longer, have a little better career, which you're beating me right now, and it's driving me crazy. And then all the – I just taking the football mentality to baseball, you got to have that because the game is – it's a grind all season long, and you got to have that toughness. I just try to bring that mentality with me on the field, and I think that's really helped me as far as making it to the major leagues and pitching well for a couple of seasons with the Tigers. And that probably has helped me the most, is just taking that football side of it and bringing that with me. That's just kind of ingrained in my blood now, and I think that's helped me more than anything.
What about, give me the best advice I ever gave you. Any great advice that you've taken with you?
The best advice? Jeez. I'm going to have to think for about 5 minutes on that.
How about the worst advice I ever gave you?
The worst? Don't tell your mother I'm telling you this. You can figure out the rest.
I tell you, the funniest thing for me is being on this journey with you in the minors when you first got into professional baseball. And for those who don't know, Daniel was a first round draft choice, got drafted by the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2008, and so 2009, your first major league season, you spent 6-7 weeks in the minor league system, and then you were in the big leagues, and then you got traded to Detroit. You pitched there for 3 seasons with the Tigers, and then you had a couple of, you know, you tore a labrum, and you kind of struggled with some injury issues. And so that's kind of where your journey is right now. You're trying to get yourself back in the big leagues, and you've been – with this year, you've been with the Tigers as well as the Cubs, and have been released and are working on, you know, working on your velocity and working on your game again to get yourself back to where you once, you know, thrived and where I believe you belong. Again, how tough has that kind of journey been here? It was, you know, it was kind of this flash. I mean, you just ran right out of the gate into the big leagues. And how tough is this journey been here the last couple of years with the injuries that you've suffered and now kind of being out of baseball and trying to work yourself back into that game again?
Well, it's tough from the standpoint that you know you should be there and you know you can pitch at that level, but right now there's nothing really I can do about it. I'm just working on what I can control, and hopefully we're working towards getting an opportunity the next year. But the injuries are, it takes a while, and you said this before, it takes a while to learn your body and to learn how to manage your body properly, and I feel like I'm just learning how to do that at age 29. So there's a fine balance and a fine line between between knowing what you can do and what you can't do, and if you got to play catch one day or not. You just got to kind of find those things out by trial and error. And unfortunately, I was one of those guys that pushed it to the limit on everything and ended up paying for it with my shoulder stuff. But hopefully from this day forward or from this year on, I've learned some tough lessons, and I felt like I'm not wanted in baseball this year, but I know I'm going to change some minds here in the next couple of months. But it's just one of those things where I feel like nobody wants me, and that's something that's going to drive me to get back there and to stay in the big leagues.
Well, you were with the Tigers the year they lost to the Giants in the World Series. You got that AL championship ring. But since then, and since you've had this journey with some injuries and some other things, like you mentioned, feeling like you're unwanted, has there been a time when you've contemplated quitting, where you just said, that's enough, I want to give up?
Well, there was a time last year when I wanted to go home, and that was with Bree with her thyroid deal. And there was a time I just wanted to say, F this, I'm going home. I got more important things to do, but I know at the end of the day that she would want me to do this and to keep pursuing what I'm doing. I think that would, for me, I think that would be slapping God across the face with a gift that he's given me, and I don't want to do that, and I don't plan on doing that. So that's just, I mean, it's been tough, but there's a lot worse when you go through something with your wife and she has cancer at age 27 or 28 or whatever she was that last year. It opens your eyes, and there's a lot more important things. And so this journey, it's been tough for me, but it's nothing compared to that.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting situations. And Bree being your wife, and you mentioned last year battling cancer, and you know, one of the things that's hurt you this year is you've been on the DL four or five times. And Major League Baseball teams look at it and say, oh, his shoulder, you know, his velocity's down. It's his shoulder. He's injured. And what people don't know is that you went on the DL four or five times to be with your wife while she was having these treatments. So that's also got to be, you know, really extremely frustrating for you where you find yourself in kind of the position you're in right now.
Well, yeah, it sucks because no one knows about that. And I'm not the type of person that's going to showcase that or have people try to feel bad for me. I mean, that was life for us this last year, and we got to deal with that personally, and I'm not going to go parading that around. I'll look at my numbers. I pitched bad because of this, and I'm not going to use that as an excuse, even though there was times where I pitched like crap because of that, and just worrying about that and not sleeping or not eating. So it was definitely, last year it was tough to perform, but sometimes you got to bite it and just keep rolling and keep fighting. I mean, that's all you can do in that situation. But last year was pretty trying for all of us.
Your wife said something to me and to you about a month ago, and I was actually upset that I didn't think of it and I didn't say it, that it wasn't mine. But it was some of the most, I guess, some of the wisest words I'd ever said, or she'd ever said. And we were sitting here in the kitchen of my house, and she said, you know, what kind of story would you have, Daniel, if your story was, well, I was drafted in the first round, I spent 7 weeks in the minors, I got called up to the big leagues, and I pitched there for 12 years. So that's an unrelatable story. Your story is great in that, you know what, you did get called up in 7 weeks, you did pitch in the big leagues for the majority of 4 years, and now you've had this kind of journey where you've had injury and struggle and your wife's sickness and stuff. And it's going to be one of those things when you make it back that's going to be an amazing story. Have you thought about kind of what it's going to feel like when you do finally kind of realize that dream and you do get back to the big leagues?
Yeah, I have thought about that, and it's probably going to be extremely emotional for everybody. It's probably going to feel better than the first time I got called up, because I think we were all expecting that when it first happened. But just the feeling of redemption, and, oh, man, it gives me goosebumps talking and thinking about it. But I know it's going to happen one day, and it'll be a celebration for all of us. And, yeah, I'm excited for that, and I think it'll be a great story. It'll be a great comeback story for her and for all of us that are sharing in that time. But I really look forward to that, and I think it's going to be a great story for all of us.
Yeah, you mentioned the emotion of the first time you got called up and how, you know, emotional that was for our family. And I'll never forget it. And, you know, you call, we get down to Phoenix because you're gonna pitch, or you got called up for that game. And so the whole family meets in Phoenix, and we get into the stadium early and meet you kind of in your uniform down by the batting cages before the game. And your father burst into tears.
Soft.
What was for you? I mean, I had people taking pictures of us as you and I embraced, and the whole family embraced, and we were all, you know, very emotional about that. What was it like for you to for all of us to gather at that particular moment when you got called up?
Oh, geez, that was such a blur, because I was in Mobile, Alabama, and for those of you who've been to Mobile, there's not really any direct flights anywhere. So I had to get up. Man, I didn't sleep that night because I was so excited, and had to pack up everything. And I maybe got a half hour of sleep. I had to get up early and go to Chase Field that day. And yeah, it turned out I pitched that night too. That was great. Luckily, I did okay. But honestly, when I was pitching, I don't even remember being out there. I can remember throwing the ball, but it was like my eyes weren't open a little bit, so it kind of, man, I don't know, I was out of body a little bit, but yeah, that was, I can remember that the night before, how exciting that was, and then from then on, it was like, okay, what do I get, who am I facing, I got to think about who I'm facing, what am I going to do to this guy, it was almost like I was doing a scouting report on the flight there. I looked at their roster, and I was seeing who I could potentially face, and I honestly don't remember what happened during that game, but it was very exciting for those couple hours before that started.
I've got to tell you, for me, it's the greatest sports moment of my life. And people always ask me, what's your greatest sports moment? What was it? You know, and I've been blessed to be on great teams. And you mentioned it, you know, three world championship teams, and, you know, winning three Super Bowls and all that. I consider those moments garbage. Absolute garbage next to watching you trot out in the sixth inning against the Atlanta Braves and going 1-2-3 in that inning. It's the proudest moment I've ever had from a sporting event standpoint. And everything for me emotionally came back watching you and thinking about all the times you beat the living snot out of me with fastballs that skipped in the grass, you know, while I'm sitting on that 5-gallon bucket and all the bruises I had and all the times that we were together on baseball fields and on road trips to Kansas and to, you know, Nebraska and to Arizona and all the different places we went. And I do have to share with you one thing, probably one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given, and I've got it right here in our kitchen. And you made me this. I believe it was for my birthday that you made me this. But it's a collage. It's a picture of you and I at Wrigley Field. And then there's a statement in the middle, and it's a baseball-framed picture. And it says here, I promised my son that I wouldn't go to a game at Wrigley, Fenway, or Yankee Stadium until he was playing in them. And it's a picture of you and I at Wrigley Field. I promised you, I made you that promise at 12 years old. And I've gotten to see you pitch in Wrigley, in Fenway, and in Yankee Stadium. And it's one of the greatest gifts I've ever had, and it's displayed very proudly in the kitchen. And so for me, just to see you achieve those things, Daniel, has been an absolute dream come true, and it's been an amazing journey. And I'm so thankful that we got to take the journey together, and I'm so proud of you, but I'm more proud of you in the father and the husband that you're becoming far more than the baseball player you are. So I just want to say thank you so much, son. And I can't wait the day that you're called back up, because it's going to be one of the great days of my life.
That's good. Get ready. It's going to happen.
I know that it will, man. I love you, buddy.
Love you.
I'd like to thank my son Daniel again for joining the program. I tell you what, as a parent, there's nothing better than watching your kids continue to fight and to continue to try to make their dreams come true. And speaking of making dreams come true, let me introduce you to DraftKings. Last football season, DraftKings.com crowned more millionaires than any other one-week fantasy sports site anywhere. And this season, the prizes are even bigger. You could start the season by winning $2 million in week one. It's the biggest fantasy football contest ever. $10 million in prizes are up for grabs, including $2 million for first place and $1 million for second. One-week fantasy means no long commitments during the course of the season. It's fantasy football on demand. Play where you want, when you want, with the players you want. You never experience football like this. Just pick your players, pile up the points, and pick up your cash. It's that easy. Easy. It isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Only a few preseason games are left before the regular season kicks off, so hurry to DraftKings.com now and use the promo code TRUTH to play for free and a shot at the $2 million top prize in Week 1 Millionaire Maker. Enter TRUTH for free entry into DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Make sure you use my promo code TRUTH. And speaking of TRUTH, let me just give you some information about the Denver Broncos, as I've been coaching over there for quite some time, and this goes directly to Peyton Manning. You want truth? I'm going to give you the truth. It's not about compiling statistics. It's about running the offense the way it's created to run under Gary Kubiak. And if you do that, you've actually got a shot at winning a championship. And I'll tell you how it's going to work when I return.
This is Chael Sonnen, and I am inviting you to join me for a podcast called You're Welcome. Every week, I talk to friends, enemies, newsmakers who are either inside or in love with the world of MMA, wrestling, or any sport that involves topless grappling. You want names? How about I drop George St. Pierre, Daniel Cormier, X-Pac, The Iron Sheik, Jim Ross, Nate Diaz, Don Fry, Vince Russo, Minnie Rourke, Chris Leben, and way more. New episodes every Wednesday only at podcast1.com. That's podcast1.com. This is Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Now, more stink.
Nice.
Here's Mark Schlereth.
Well, many of you know, maybe some of you don't know, I still live in Denver. I still make my home in Denver. And I've had the great opportunity here since Gary Kubiak has been hired as the head coach of the Denver Broncos to come back into the organization and help out a little bit. Gary reached out to me, asked me to come by, help out the offensive line, help out some of the young guys, some of the young players, and just to be around the team. So the last couple of weeks of training camp, man, I've been out there a bunch of times, just kind of watching practice, helping out some of the young guys, really helping transition from the college game to the professional game. Not that their offensive line coach is awesome, but what I always say, it's the nuance that I can help you with, right? You give kind of the blocking scheme that you want, and I'll give you the nuance on how it actually works on game day and how you can get a little bit more efficient and some of the techniques you can use to actually hold and not get called for holding and some of the things that you have to have as an offensive lineman. And it's been a lot of fun to be around the game again like that. And one of the things that's been really fun and interesting to watch is Peyton Manning trying to learn Gary Kubiak's system and his new offense. And, you know, it's very much like the transition that John Elway went through late in his career under Mike Shanahan. It wasn't so much about John go out and win us games, John go out and sling the football around. It was more about team, because I really believe that it's not great quarterbacks that win championships. It's great teams that win championships. Complete teams win championships. And Peyton Manning could do really an amazing thing for himself if he just looked at the history of the franchise that he plays with and sees how John Elway acquiesced toward the end of his career to not compile stats anymore, but to let the team function, let the team become more of a complete team and kind of take his role back a little bit. And he did that willingly, knowing that it was going to help him ultimately win a world championship. Listen, you can't argue, nobody can, that Peyton Manning is one of the great quarterbacks in the history of this game, one of the smartest quarterbacks in the history of this game. But at some point, it's about championships. For crying out loud, you have one world championship that you played a Super Bowl against the Rex Grossman-led Bears. If you didn't win that one, it'd be a blemish against you. But you have one championship where brother Eli, who isn't half the quarterback you are, and he's a good one, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't have anything, none of the stats, none of the cachet that you have. He's got two world championship rings. And he played great in those games, don't get me wrong, but Peyton Manning's one of the greatest that's ever played. You can't argue that. The bottom line is this, though. You are going to have to acquiesce to Gary Kubiak if you want to win a championship. And I assume that you do. It's no longer about compiling statistics. You got more statistics than you'll ever need. I mean, you got statistics falling out the ears. It's about understanding what it takes to win championships in the National Football League and basically giving up some of the authority that you have had over the course of your career and trusting a guy who has championship pedigree in Gary Kubiak. Here's a couple things that you have to know. Peyton has always been, they call him the sheriff. He's been the best in the business, and it's not close. Don't give me Tom Brady. Don't give me Aaron Rodgers. Don't give me any of those guys. It's not close. Peyton Manning running things from the line of scrimmage is the best quarterback that's ever been pre-snap, getting himself into a play that he wants to have success. Best that's ever done it. Guess what? Just because you can get us in the best play possible from a one-on-one matchup with your key receiver against their corner does not mean that that's the best thing you could possibly do for our offense in the long run. You have to be able to step back from that and understand that running the football and basically not checking out of it and not making our offensive line play on their heels is going to be the best thing in the long run for this football team. And it's not about September, and it's not about October, and it's not about November. It's about December. It's about January. It's about playoff football. And it's about being able to dictate tempo and dictate run in critical situations, something that you've never had on any football team you've ever played on, because you've always been in control at the line of scrimmage, and you're going to have to relinquish some of that control if it's about championships. So that's one thing you're going to have to do. The other thing you're going to have to do, listen, there's nobody that's ever been better, as I mentioned, at the line of scrimmage. You know, you've seen it. Peyton Manning loves the histrionics, right? He gets in there, blue 80, check, 58's the mic, 58's the mic. No, check, 57's the mic. Red 62, Omaha. And what does he do? He's basically just throwing a bunch of stuff out there, seeing what defense you check into, so he knows who to throw the ball to and what formation or what running play he wants to check to. That's great. But the bottom line for me as an offensive lineman, it makes me play the game on my heels. And so when it comes down to it, you're not ready to come off the ball and shorten anybody's neck. You've hurt your offensive line by doing all the things you do at the line of scrimmage. He's a snap count fanatic. He's a freak because he knows if he holds that snap count long enough, you as a defense got to show what you're in. You have to show it to him. And when you show it to him, he's going to pick you apart. But that doesn't make it the best thing for this offense. Sometimes you need to run against an 8-man front, and you got to say, this one's on first sound, and we're going to come off the ball, and we're going to try to punish you. And over the course of four quarters, you know what's going to happen? You're going to punish a defense, and you're going to basically punish them into submission. And that's what's got to happen. And it'll be interesting to see if Peyton Manning's willing to acquiesce and to embrace this offense, because if he does, this is one of the teams that's got a chance to win a world championship. If he doesn't, they'll be ousted in the first round of playoffs as per usual. All right, you know what it's time for? One of my favorite segments in the entire world. It's time for Question Mark, my friend.
Yes, it is, and you know what? We have a sponsor now for Question Mark, don't we?
I know. This is going to be great. And there's a lot of pressure on you. Not only do you get to pick the questions. So first off, the interactive part of the program, right? So on Twitter, on Tuesday mornings, I roll it out there and say, hey, man, time for question mark. If you want to be a question mark, if you want to be a part of the podcast, Podcast One, The Stinking Truth, shoot me your questions. And I do that once or twice during the course of the day. You compile the questions, but now the pressure is really on you because you have to pick the question of the week. And our sponsor, Stamps.com, is going to send the question of the week, my green chili. How about that?
It's like a double win. They not only get the answer from you and get to interact with you, they get your chili.
That's right. So I'm going to send them the chili. So let me introduce you to my friends at Stamps.com. You know, who wants to go to the post office? Nobody wants it. It takes up valuable time. Leasing a postage meter can be expensive with multi-year commitments, hidden fees. Well, guess what? I know a better way. That's my friends at Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your desk using your own computer, your own printer. Even get special postage discounts you can't find at the post office. Plus, Stamps.com is more powerful than any postage meter. It just a fraction of the cost. You can save up to 80% compared to a postage meter, and you'll avoid those time-consuming trips to the post office. I use it. We're using it for the show. We're going to send you green chili using Stamps.com, taking care of the postage, taking care of everything for us. And listen, as a small business owner, you guys know I own this chili company. Man, you are the grand poobah of all things green chili. You're the CEO, the CFO, you're the main marketing guy. You got to run everywhere and do everything. I don't got time to run to the post office. That's why I use Stamps.com, because they free me up on a daily basis so I don't have to go there. And right now, you can use my promo code, that's STINK, for a special offer, a no-risk trial, plus $110 bonus offer includes a digital scale and up to $55 in free postage. So here's what you do, guys. It's so easy. Don't wait. Do me a favor. Do it now. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in my name, Stink. That's Stamps.com. Enter my name, Stink. You can save that time. You can save that money. Go to Stamps.com. Enter my name, Stink.
Nice, and that means it's time now for question mark.
All right.
Are you ready?
Ready to roll, buddy.
All right, here we go. Question number one comes from Daniel Ray, who is at Chef Disco Fries. Sweet name. Yeah. Which of your championship teams was the greatest for you? And then it says, keep up the great work, best new podcast of the year. Daniel trying to win the chili there.
Yes, he is trying to kiss up, and I appreciate that about Daniel. For me, the best championship, I was a young player with Washington when we beat Buffalo in Super Bowl 26. And so, I wasn't necessarily a team leader. I think it was my third year in the league. And, I was a starter. I was a Pro Bowler on that team. But still, there were so many guys that I had so much reverence for, not only Coach Joe Gibbs, but guys like Darryl Green and Art Monk and Monty Coleman and Russ Grimm and Jeff Bostic and Joe Jacoby and all those guys, Jimmy Lachey. So it was just our team was just littered with guys that were, in my mind, just venerable guys. So when I got here to Denver, I was older in my career and more of one of the team captain type guys. And Super Bowl 32, that championship to me was so special. And it was really special because, as kind of a historian of the game, if you will, I knew how John Elway, how he'd been beaten up over the course of time and how he'd gone to three world championships and didn't play well in any of them. And their team got just absolutely destroyed in all those games. So to see him finally get that monkey off his back, that made it the best championship for me. This is Super Bowl 32 when the Denver Broncos beat the Green Bay Packers. I think it was 31-24, that was, for me, the best championship I was involved in.
Well, there you go, Chef Disco Fries. Question number two is coming from Ryan Udeman. Love that name, at Ryan Udeman. Which way do the Bears go after the season if Jay has another Jay kind of year?
I think they'll have to go in a different direction, whether that's the draft. I mean, let's face it. The only guys you pick up on the free agent market are journeyman guys at the quarterback position. So you're probably going to have to find somebody to draft that you're going to believe in and try to develop. And sometimes those guys aren't around. I mean, look at the Houston Texans, right? They've been trying to get over the Matt Schaub experience for a couple of years now. And, and they just named Brian Hoyer their starting quarterback and Ryan Mallett's on their team. And, you know, come around draft time, they just haven't had anybody at that position that they were really high on. I mean, they drafted Savage late. I don't know what it was, maybe the fourth round. But the bottom line is it's a hard position to fill. But if Jay Cutler continues to be, quote unquote, Jay Cutler, then I think at that point it's time to kind of cut bait and figure out what's next on the agenda for the Chicago Bears, the quarterback position.
All right, at Wiggins Adam 80 asks, who's the most talented guy you ever played with whose career was unfortunately cut short?
It's got to be Terrell Davis. You think about Terrell coming out of Georgia, and he was a sixth-round pick, and, you know, he's buried on the depth chart, made his play on special teams in a game against the San Francisco 49ers in Tokyo. And he made this huge hit on kickoff cover. And at that point, they were like, hey, put him in the game. Let's see what he does. And then he ripped off a bunch of 6, 8, 12-yard runs, you know. And everybody's like, hey, wait a minute. We used to call him the Rook. And a couple weeks later, man, he's the starting running back of the Denver Broncos. We ended up cutting a bunch of veteran players and started him as a rookie. And I think his rookie year, he had 1,100 yards rushing. And then, you know, his second year, he had, you know, 1,500 yards rushing. His third year, he had 1,700 yards rushing. His fourth year, he had 2,007 yards rushing. And then in 1999, he blew his knee out in the third or fourth game of the season. And the guy was never the same. I mean, he never could get back on the field full time, which is just sad because, he was phenomenal. And we had guys in 1999 who came in. Orlandus Gary came in lieu of TD when he got hurt and rushed for 1,200 yards. And then Mike Anderson, I believe, the next year came in and rushed for 1,400 yards. But, you know, I always said that 1,200-yard season, if it was TD, he would have had 1,700 yards. In that 1,400-yard season for Mike Anderson, he had another 2,000-yard season. It was just a shame that, you know, he blew his knee out and he just never responded the way you would hope a guy would respond. So that just that's just sad to me. But he's probably the most talented guy that I've ever been around, that his career was cut short. And I think he's deserving of the Hall of Fame. It's just hard when your career is you know, been cut short by injury. It's hard to get in.
Yeah. Another sad story of the what ifs, man. At Wolfie2424 asks, do you think Rex Ryan is better suited for the lunch pail Bills more than he was in the Big Apple?
Yeah, I think the Big Apple will tear down just about anybody. And, you know, sometimes it's always funny. We always want our athletes or our coaches to be honest, right? We want them to be transparent. We want them to reveal things. And as soon as they do, we're like, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that. You know, we want to crucify them for their honesty. He is a lunch pail dude, man. I love Rex Ryan. If he didn't exist, you ought to create him. And I think Buffalo is so much better suited. I think the town of Buffalo embraces Rex Ryan. They embrace the tough guy. They embrace the bully kind of aspect. They embrace the, like you said, the lunch pail, the hard hat. I don't think New York ever really did that for him. And I think that New York media will just wear your butt down, just absolutely wear you down. So I think it's a much better situation for Rex Ryan.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, as a long-suffering Jets fan, I think the fans did embrace Rex, but the media ate him alive. Once the success faded, the media ate him alive, and then the fans just eventually went, well, maybe what this guy's writing is right. You know, as opposed to the initial embrace was, we'd love this guy, you know? And in Buffalo, he's not going to have that, right?
Well, I've dealt with that New York media, man, and they will I've had some things happen to me in that New York media that you're just like, you know, I mean, it is what it is. Heck, we do it to ourselves at ESPN, you know. I could be effusive in my praise for Tim Tebow and talk about his work ethic, talk about everything under the sun, being effusive, like I said, in my praise. And then I say, but he doesn't have the requisite skills to play quarterback. And the only headline that comes up on ESPN.com is, Schlur says Tebow doesn't have the requisite skills to play quarterback in this league. You know, and that's the only thing that will come up. And that's just the way the media works. And you're right about them basically crucifying Rex over every decision. Not that they ever had a quarterback or an offense to get anything done there. So it is what it is.
Yep. At Eric4DC writes, which team's O-line could you help out today?
From a playing standpoint or coaching? A coaching standpoint, I could help everybody out with nuance.
I got to imagine he means playing. So who has a an offensive line that is in NFL shape where if you suited up, it would be better than what's there?
And there's not one. If they promise not to hit me, I could really help them, Rich. But if they're hitting me, I'm getting crushed. Now, I could go and help Washington a ton. They drafted a kid in fifth overall that is struggling with his hands, you know, struggling from a blocking technique standpoint. I know I could help kids grow into the position. But as far as playing is concerned, those days are long behind me. I would break like a piece of peanut brittle if anybody hit me.
Good to know. We go in the new no touch NFL, right?
Right.
Okay.
It's going that way anyhow. I may be making a comeback here eventually when they basically legislate contact out of the game. I'm going to be right back in there.
Right. When flag football becomes too rough. No, sorry. You touched him when you grabbed the flag. Right. At Beard Dog writes, we all love your analysis and opinions on football. Who do you love to follow? What football analyst is your favorite to follow?
Oh, man, my football analyst that I like. I love the intensity of Teddy Bruschi. Teddy and I do shows on Friday nights together at ESPN. We break down tape. We do, you know, NFL Live. It's a real Fridays. It's just Teddy and I usually, and it's a real very intense kind of breakdown. I love watching the game with him, because he sees it from the defensive perspective. You know, when I say, hey, they're in a right formation, he goes, no, they're not. They're in a left formation, right? Because he's looking at it the other way. And it's just funny to me that the things that he sees that I don't see when we're watching games together are the things that I see that he doesn't recognize when we're watching games together. I've learned so much football from that guy. I have so much respect for him. Merrill Hodge is another guy that I just have a ton of respect for. Jaws. I love the guys who I know, like me, are grinding. They're grinding through tape. They're doing. They're just giving great effort and working exceptionally hard at coming up with stuff because you know they read a box score, but because they actually watched the game, they studied the game, and they're trying to educate people on the game. And so I still learn things from Jaws. I learn things from Teddy Bruschi. I learned things from Merrill Hodge. I like Tim Hasselbeck and what he teaches me about the game. So I'm an open book, man. I love to learn. I love to learn things about the game that I didn't know. And those guys oftentimes teach me stuff.
Well, you know what? This brings us to the exciting point of the show where we pick the winner.
Ooh, boy, that's
so
a lot of pressure
I'm gonna
on
do
you.
This.
That's
I'm going to do
a lot
this
of pressure
the
on
most
you.
Fair way possible, the most honest and fair way possible. I have all of them in front of me individually turned upside down, and I've mixed them up.
Oh, really? So you're not going to drop a set of onions and pick the one you like best. You're going to mix them up.
Because every time they mention the Jets, I'm going to pick that, and I'm going to start taking the same kind of crap you take.
Okay, that's fair.
All right.
That one's fair. I'll give you that.
Okay, so we might change. We might change, but we're going to start it out honest and fair. I'm sure it's going to morph into something a little bit more devious, but here we go. It is, check it out. It's Adam Wiggins, at Wiggins Adam 80. He asked you who the most talented guy you ever played with whose career was cut short was.
All right.
And he's going to get your green chili, courtesy of our friends at Stamps.com.
It's going to be great, and I'm going to rely on you to reach out to him and set that up, and then get me the information, the address, and I will get that shipped out.
We will take care of business on the back end, and we have completed another program. We are that much closer to the NFL season when we will have two programs every week.
I can't wait, man. This is exciting. I appreciate you. I appreciate you propping me up because you know I couldn't do it alone. So thank you so much, and appreciate all you people for downloading and listening to the podcast. And even though all you Philadelphia fans think I hate your guts, I don't. I just don't buy into the system. And I could be wrong, man. I may be eating crow. It's not the first time. I'm wrong all the time. All you got to do is contact my wife. She'll tell you how wrong I am on a daily basis. I mean, it happens, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the bottom line is, listen, I don't do it just to get under your skin. It's truly what I believe. You know why? Because it's the stinking truth, my friend.
Thanks for hanging with the Stinking Truth. Don't forget to download new episodes every Wednesday on iTunes and at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.